Hello, friends. We are continuing. We are with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 147A. And we closed last time with a brilliant definition of the love as an aspect of will, a point very little realized by the mass of men. The will is the first aspect, so the second and third have to be a part of it. And just as the third aspect is an aspect of the second. It is the will to draw into oneself, or the will to attract into oneself. And this will, when exerted towards that which is not material, we, in reaction to the differentiating mind, call love. And I pointed out the second ray integration formula: the love of love must dominate, not love of being loved. The power to draw unto oneself must dominate, but into the worlds of form that power must someday fail to penetrate. He's saying the same thing there. This is the first step towards a deeper search. Love is not for the form. Love is the attraction for that which is not material, and drawing into oneself and merging with that which is the consciousness of the individual, of the other individual, or group, or humanity, or the being itself of the other individual, group, or humanity. So we are moving on. We are in that section where we are dealing with the expression of the will. In this case, it's a second-ray expression. There's been a tremendous emphasis upon this during the past 350 years, going back to perhaps 1575, which was the time when, 1925 to 1575, 350 years. We're in the approximate period. The two great exponents are the two best-known teachers, the two great exponents of the second ray, and the two masters who have attempted to awaken humanity in the West to a realization of hierarchy are Master K.H. and Master Moria. The keynotes of this second ray, the keynotes of this kind of will, illumination, vision, sight, or spiritual perception, and of the fusion of the occidental and mystic way are dominant in this cycle. The Buddha was the great messenger. He summed up in himself, as far as humanity was concerned, the light of wisdom. He radiated the light of wisdom. He guaranteed the fruition that came from the past. And with the Christ, he was able to say, "I am the light of the world." The Christ went farther and demonstrated the cosmic principle of love. And this was the beginning. This was the sentence that we listened to. It is the will, love is an aspect of will. It is the will to draw into oneself, or the will to attract into itself. And this will, when exerted towards that which is not material, we, in reaction to the differentiating mind, call love. But humanity has to see that which must be loved before that power of the will is sufficiently invoked. Humanity has to see that which must be loved. Then the vision can become a manifestation and a fact in expression. So the second aspect of the will is associated with the vision. Initiation for the first aspect, the second aspect, vision. We have the will to initiate. Will to initiate and initiation, and we have the will to unify and vision. So How Shall Humanity See? The Methods for Inducing Soul Control. The second one is called The Quality of the Hidden Vision. How Shall That Vision Be Presented? And then when the vision is seen, desire to attain becomes very strong, and its growing intensity evokes the will. It is here that the wonder of the work of Christ, the Lord of Love, emerges into our consciousness. He made it very clear that this love which he demonstrated was an aspect of the will. We have the will to love, in fact, and he is always, D.K. is always counseling that we must find a way to do this, to make this a guiding factor in our lives. He makes it very clear that this love which he demonstrated was an aspect of the will, functioning through the medium of the second ray. This powerful love released into the world the cosmic principle of love. As I said, and has been said, the Christ experienced a cosmic touch. Christ, cosmic touch. Came into touch with the cosmic principle of love. It's always the cosmic. It has to do with the cosmic plane, with the cosmic astral plane. The true source of love for our system. And let's see. Well, maybe the words cosmic touch will bring us where we want to go. There seems to be one place. On the way of descending approaches, the Buddha, from the mental plane and also upon it, embodied in himself the blazing enlightenment which is the result of a rare occurrence, a cosmic touch. He challenged the people to the path of light, of which knowledge and wisdom are two aspects. These, when brought into relationship with each other, produce the light, knowledge and wisdom. In a curious and esoteric manner, therefore, the Buddha embodied in himself the force and the activity of the third ray. In a curious and esoteric manner, of the third aspect of divinity, the divine cosmic principle of intelligence. By its fusion with the ray of our solar system, the ray of love, he expressed perfectly the significance of light in matter and of intelligence principle found in form. And so forth. Then came the next great avatar who, enfolding in himself all that the Buddha had of light and wisdom, being fully enlightened in the occult and spiritual sense, on the ray of descending approach, embodied also the peace of inclusiveness which comes from the touch of divine acquiescence. He was the embodied force of submission, and he carried the divine approach to the astral plane, the plane of feeling. So we're constantly told about the Christ and the cosmic principle of love, and here we have the cosmic principle of intelligence, and we relate it to a touch, I assume, of the cosmic mental plane, and it's Psychology 2, 277 to 278. And I'm going to put this here. Okay. Want to... Right, EP2, EP2, 277 and 278, and let's make it smaller. So this speaks of the Buddha's touch, and it suggests by association the touch that the Christ experienced. A cosmic touch. And this esoteric manner, this suggests the monad. In a curious and esoteric manner, the Buddha embodied in himself the force and activity of the third ray. As I've said before, the word esoteric often suggests the monad. It does on page 420, 421, when speaking of the esoteric ray of Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn. Obviously, it's the monadic ray. So we have to piece together certain statements that are made. And I want to just say that here. In a curious and esoteric manner, representing the monad, the Buddha embodied in himself the force and activity of the third ray, of the third aspect of divinity, the divine cosmic principle of intelligence, cosmic principle of intelligence. And the Christ, we are told, embodied the cosmic principle of love. So both the Christ and the Buddha had touches. Of cosmic energy. Okay. So, again, the three aspects of the divine will can be seen functioning through the second ray. Through each ray, 1, 2, 3, three aspects of divinity are functioning. The will to initiate or condition demonstrates in Christ's work. Let's see. The will to fulfillment. All right. So this is an important factor here. We have first, second, and third ray will, and we are dealing with three aspects of each of these. So we have the will to initiate, the will to unify, and the will to overcome death, or let's say the will that conquers death. Now, you can wonder whether these three aspects of the will could be connected with each one of the seven rays, each one of the zodiacal triangles. Could this, we will see that the will to initiate, to unify, to conquer death will, I suspect, work through the third ray. Could we continue that with the rays of attribute, or is this triple demonstration only found in the rays of aspect? If we continue with the rays of attribute, which DK does not do, just as he does not give more than three fusion formulas, then we would have 21, which again is an appealing number and seems to complete the sequence. But of course, the rays of attribute are derivative of the rays of aspect, as we have been discussing. There was a pretty good proof there of the, I remember a few programs back, of the second and third ray combining to make the sixth. I think I pointed that out, but one will have to go looking for it. Always when you find something, it's best to nail it and put it right where you can find it again, because a missing piece may stay missing for a long time and be right under your nose, of course. So now we're talking about the great second ray and the will to initiate in terms of the great second ray. The will to initiate or to condition, you know, as we say, will to condition life, as it's sometimes called, demonstrates in Christ's work as he inaugurates the era wherein it became possible for the kingdom of God to appear on earth. In reality, this will be a demonstration of the fusion of the two centers, humanity and hierarchy. The three and the two will fuse. And this is already happening via the new group of world servers. By fusion, I mean their complete reciprocal at-one-ment, and when he says something like complete reciprocal at-one-ment, you see, he's a masterfully using words. Do we not sense the energy of Gemini? The reciprocity of Gemini. It will inaugurate an era wherein, through increased capacity to see the vision, that's what we're doing. A lot of our work is that, isn't it? Students of esotericism, isn't it that? To see the vision and to present the vision to others so they can become inspired by the vision and desire it so keenly that their will is evoked. It will inaugurate an era wherein, through increased capacity to see the vision and increased power to identify oneself with the vision, a race of men will be produced whose life expression will be that of love, wisdom, and remember earlier we talked about the second and fourth ray as that which, as the rays which are becoming, at least, expressive in the human kingdom and also in the Occident. So the hope here lies within the Occident, as the East has given the Occident what it needs to go further, just as the Buddha has given the Christ what he needs to go further. Regarding the will that brings fulfillment in terms of the second ray, you know, the three aspects of will are considered in relation to the three major rays. The will which brings fulfillment demonstrates through the second ray by the means of that driving force which enables the second ray steadily to achieve its goal, relentlessly pushing forward, permitting itself no let-up or leeway until the desired goal is reached. Would you think that of the second ray type? No let-up, no leeway. It's a sentence I like often to quote, the steady push forward, holding on, not releasing one's grip, slowly moving forward, but it's a driving force. It's, you know, and the word drive is oftentimes used in association with the first ray and sixth ray, and here it is used in association with the second. Steadily achieving its goal, the wise use of slow action, but steadily moving forward, relentlessly pushing forward, permitting itself no let-up, no leeway, until the desired goal is reached. It's almost like it has some qualities of the sixth ray, from which it came, in one sense, has some qualities of the sixth ray, from which it came, also from the fourth. This is a different expression to the will of the first ray, which is dynamic and which crashes forward in spite of all obstacles. I think this is a colorful expression, which is fairly easy to remember. The dynamic crashing through the wall will. I guess secondary types don't like to run against a wall and break it down. Or that steady, relentless, constant, driving force applied until the goal is reached. Well, when you're wondering about the kind of will that is manifesting through you, here are some excellent descriptions. The latter does not require the slower method. See, the speed factor is always connected with the first ray and can be somewhat reduced when connected with the second ray. Does not require the slower method of the steady drive. But test yourself and see where you stand with these methods of will as the will becomes active. It is also the will which conquers death. And I think I did use that. Yes, I did. Because of its intense love of reality and of that persistent one who exists behind all phenomena. So, intense love of the presence, who, which, persists forever. So, that is the one reality, and all appearances and disappearances do not touch the persistent one. All appearances and disappearances do not touch the persistent one. I think, you know, we have to see the pattern of what Master DK is doing. And he is giving us, one day, and maybe it's been done. I just saw recently a person who had laid out a very intricate picture of the lotuses of our solar system. It was obviously one of those meticulous and tireless efforts. One has to have patience when approaching such things, just as one has to have patience when approaching commentaries like this. But the one constant and good thing is that Master DK's words are always there. So even if we don't agree with what I'm saying about it, there are his words, and one can ponder oneself. Just stop the machine and ponder. So it has intense love of reality and of that persistent one, the persistent one who is the reality. In the old commentary, this type of will, the will to love, is spoken of in the following terms. So the will to unify is equivalent to the will to love. The transcendent one said, I am alone. I must arise and seek with ceaseless urge that which produces completion. Round out my circle whole. Intensify my life. Intensity my life? I bet it's intensify. I'll bet. Intensify my life and make me truly one. And this because I recognize the two. I must have union with my other self, the self I dimly sense. Unto my heart I drew the other one, and drawing thus I gave enlightenment. I dowered with enrichments I freely gave. This tells us how the magnetic power of the third, of the second ray works, attracting, and in the attracting, giving. Unto my heart I drew the other one. That other one is all the others as one. All others as one. And drawing thus I gave enlightenment, I dowered with enrichments, I freely gave. Remember, we talked about in esoteric healing, giving too much. The second ray gives too much. And this is a problem for disease. There it is. I guess that's the entirety of it. And DK seems to be telling us how certain types of will are equivalent. In this case, the will to love, the will to unify, and the pursuing of the vision, which is highly motivating. The vision of unity motivates to achieve the unity. And here is the fulfillment. It will be fulfilled, and it will not relent until it is fulfilled, and it will stay on its path until the fulfillment is achieved. So the transcendent one is the monad, or the monad of any of the beings we're talking about. The one who can see the end from the beginning, and the one who is above the worlds in which initiatives and effects are being worked out. So there is a highly abstracted status here. Now, this embodies not the mystical vision of the other one, but the will aspect of the planetary logos, the incentive behind the life of Shambhala. What is incentive? Incentive is that which makes any being move. It is attractive, and it is impelling. We can have the incentive ahead of us as a vision to be achieved, or the incentive is that which pushes us forward. It is the Lord of Sacrifice who speaks, and there's a strong connection of the second ray with sacrifice, also the first ray, differently. Connection of the second ray with sacrifice. The key note of sacrifice with the process of making whole runs through all that concerns the will aspect as it functions through the seven rays. Now, this is so interesting. We've been told that sacrifice is the process of making sacred. It's not only then the process of making sacred, but the process of making whole. And I, you know, forgive me, here I go again, but I just have to put that in the Alice Bailey extracts on page 625. Key note of sacrifice as sacrifice as the process of making whole. And that is in Esoteric Astrology 625. See, while I'm doing this, you can ponder on the keynote, right? And make it more meaningful to yourself. Sometimes I think I should just slow down. And then, of course, it would take forever. Well, not really forever, but too long a time, given the other things to be done. See, this whole idea of giving is so powerful. Take a look here. This is from Esoteric Healing. And we see how the Great One, the Second Ray, Ray Lord, poured out his life throughout all parts and every aspect of manifestation. He poured his life from the center to the periphery, and from the periphery to the center. He rushed, carrying abundance of life, energizing all forms of himself, producing excess of movement, endless extension, abundant growth, and undue haste. Imagine that, haste for the second ray. He knew not what he wanted, because he wanted all, desired all, attracted all, and gave to all too much. It's almost amusing. And there are types of behavior here associated with the second ray, which you might not suspect. Undue haste, running. Usually, I suppose that's once this secondary type is really motivated. We learn that it can lack love and speed. We learn that in Esoteric Psychology 1, unless, of course, it's really motivated. But there we are on page 299. And I think it's worth putting here, I freely gave. Esoteric Healing 299. The Great One poured his life throughout all parts, outpouring. It's very Aquarian in a way, isn't it? The old commentary, you know, is extraordinary, telling us of things that seem to be always so. So we're not talking about the mystical vision, but the will aspect of the planetary logos, the incentive behind the life of Shambhala. It is the Lord of Sacrifice who speaks, the keynote of sacrifice, or the process of making whole, we'll say, by giving to all who need to be fulfilled. I would say that the will to fulfillment has a particular connection with the second ray, but it is found as an aspect of all the first three types of will to initiate, will to unify, will to evolve. And we'll see how he does this. The keynote of sacrifice, or the process of making whole, runs through all that concerns the will aspect as it functions through the medium of the seven rays. This becomes beautifully apparent in the activity of the second ray, as it is the channel of the will of God. So, sacrifice, giving, making whole, completing, fulfilling. It's a Jupiterian, solar, Sirian mode of behavior. Okay. It knows itself. Now here's the way in which the being who embodies this type of will know itself in various ways, as the transcending will, the transmitting will, the transforming will, and the transfiguring. It's all pretty intricate here. We have to get the structure. It'd be better to lay this out visually, of course. It knows itself as the transcending will because behind its expression of cosmic love, attracting, fusing, producing cohesion, lies a synthetic vision of divine intention. So always the vision is found here with the second ray. Jupiter is a great secondary planet. It's the planet of vision. Interesting that Sagittarius, though, which is a lord of vision and intuition, is not conveying the second ray, though it does work through Jupiter and has the sun as one of its decanate rulers. It differentiates between process and goal, between initiation and that which is revealed by the initiatory process, and that is something which is as yet unknown to initiates below the third degree, that which is revealed by the initiatory process. What is revealed, what do we know or can imagine? Life itself. The initiatory process, and that which is something which is as yet unknown to initiates below the third degree. Herein lies the distinction between the Christ and the Buddha. The latter revealed the process, but the Christ embodied in himself both goal and process. Well, of course, the Buddha did give the process, but he also did he not embody the great light and the great wisdom. He revealed the cosmic principle of love, and where did he get that? You know, this is from the cosmic astral plane, and by its means embodied in himself, he produced effects and momentous changes in the world through those presented to him for initiation. We might say that the Christ drew others as the one into himself, just as it tells us in the old commentary above when looking at the definition of love. And they were uplifted, enlightened, made whole. This whole making and the second ray. So this is the transcending will. Of course, you know, these things have to be pondered and pondered, because behind its expression of cosmic love is the synthetic vision, the vision of what the higher will intends, the synthetic vision of what the higher will intends. It differentiates between a process and goal. The goal is higher, between initiation and that which is revealed by the initiatory process, which is as yet unknown to initiates. So that which is revealed and the goal are the two highest things mentioned here, higher than process. And DK seems to think that particularly the Buddha revealed process, though to me it seems that he embodied in himself the great light and a great wisdom. The Christ revealed the cosmic principle of love, and by its means embodied in himself. He embodied this cosmic principle. He produced effects also, and momentous changes in the world. Maybe we're looking at the changes actually produced by the Christ or the Buddha. The second ray knows itself as the transmitting will. Well, it's all one monad and it's all one will, right? With variation. All one monad being acting through differentiations of the one will, or its one will. The secondary being, as I go over this, you know, I just say, well, why don't we live with this for a few years? I've never had to be quite so careful about it. And it only reveals to me that I have not been careful enough. The transmitting will, because through its means, something passes between the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter, which draws them together until eventually they form one blended whole. A transmission of a magnetic something. And we had before, we had related the transmitting will to the monadic ray. Of course, the transcending one has that ray, but the transcending one has to communicate something to the transmitting one, who carries it farther into the five worlds or whatever worlds are lower. This is a basic mystery, the basic mystery of initiation, and concerns the at-oneing will, which functions through love. Some beautiful things are said here. Its lowest expression and its most material symbol is the love between the sexes symbol. And one must disengage from attraction to the symbol and utilize the symbol to evoke a still higher meaning of that which the symbol embodies. This is the basic mystery, the mystery of initiation. Something goes forth from the initiator, which draws the opposites together. We can say the initiator is the transmitter, and something goes forth from the initiator, which draws the opposites together. And perhaps we can say that the candidate for initiation is drawn into the initiator and experiences what the initiator experiences, at least for that time, and then it has to be sustained. We rise up and enter a new point of tension, and then it has to be somehow held and worked out in the lower worlds. This is, of course, the challenge. One would almost want to ponder every point. The second ray knows itself as the transmitting will because through its means, through this will, as it transmits the second ray, something passes between the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter, which draws them together. It's always the middle type of electricity which draws together. We look at Venus here as well. It has so much of this second ray in an ultimate sense, and it magnetically fuses the pairs of opposites, mind and heart particularly, knowledge and wisdom. And Venus is involved with initiation, of course. The initiation comes from Sirius, but the planet in our system most like Sirius is Venus, sharing certain rays in common, and is a planetary sponsor of the initiatory process on our Earth. So we'll go over it. It knows itself as the transforming will. This is the being who is expressing the second ray, the being who is working through the second ray. See, the second ray being expressing will knows itself as several different kinds of will. It knows itself likewise as the transforming will because the entire evolutionary process, which is in the last analysis the working out of the interrelation between God and his world, between cause and effect, and between life and form, is based upon the transformation brought about by divine attraction. So if you want to boil that all down, we can say that love transforms. And those who do not love or who do not recognize themselves as being in the love or as love itself do not become transformed. At least it takes a longer time until the love finally takes over. Because a right relationship transforms. It brings right interplay. Through mutual attraction comes refinement and harmonization and the conformity to the archetype of purpose. But, you know, these are words, and the words require pondering until something gels and you say, aha, okay. Words are just as sounding brass unless they manage to actually evoke the energy. And it's the energy which is convincing. So this is the transforming will based on the transformation brought about by divine attraction. The law of attraction and repulsion is the great method of transformation. This enables spirit to mount upon the shoulders of matter, as HPB expresses it, and forces matter to achieve the purification which will lead it eventually to act as a transparent medium for the revelation of divinity. I think what we need some time is the mathematics of transparency. Some frequency relation which banishes opacity. Frequency relation which banishes, I'll just, opacity, which is the inability to see through when things are opaque. And when things are rightly related, right relationship brings transparency. And wrong relationship continues to promote veiling. There's deliberate veiling, which is used as protection, and there's unnecessary veiling. So I'll throw in the word unnecessary there, as in the veils of Maya, which are unnecessary and have to be dispersed. You know, you can sense the things that lie ahead, and you can sense the tremendous beauty and intricacy of that which will be worked out in time as we rid ourselves of the very lowest blinding expressions. We must rid ourselves of the lowest forces which blind and prevent the full expression of divinity. And this second ray being, wielding second ray will, knows itself finally as the will which transfigures. It just strikes me that the Tibetan is just giving us the seeds here, and that any one of these things, aspects of will, would require a great pondering, going deeper all the time. It was this transfiguration which Christ manifested as he emerged before the startled eyes of his disciples, and it was the Christ. He it was who had the power. It was the Christ. Only he had the power to produce such a glory. When he emerged before the startled eyes of his disciple as light incarnate and was transfigured before them, transfiguration is a raising up into source. The realization that appearance is really that from which it came. The form turns into light. I mean, even atomic energy is a kind of transfiguration of the atom. It's going beyond the customary form. and not taking the form for the reality. So, you know, over and over we have to go over these things constantly. The transcending will, it has this synthetic vision of divine intention and knows the end from the beginning, and the end is the goal, and it knows the process and what must be achieved, and that which must be achieved is already in the archetype, which is the purpose. It knows itself as the transmitting will. It transmits the at-one-ing will. The transmitting will in this case becomes the at-one-ing will. It transmits this energy which brings about at-one-ment. The at-one-ing will which functions through love. It knows itself as the transforming will. Transformation is based upon divine attraction. Love transforms. The law of attraction and repulsion is a transformative law. It's changing wrong relationship into right relationship. Right relationship. And finally, it knows itself as the transfiguring, the will which transfigures, and it reveals the glory of the light of the soul. Revealing the glory. Light of the soul. In Christ's case, it was more than that. This glory may have been more, you know, he was reenacting the third initiation taken long ago. Even as Krishna, he had taken the fourth initiation, and that was 3,000 BC, or 3,000 years earlier. The entire process of transcendence, resulting eventually here in transfiguration, so this is the highest expression of the fourfold process. And transfiguration is the lowest. The lowest expression of the fourfold process is worked out in relation to the second ray by the combined influences of the three constellations through which this ray chooses by an act of its sufficient will to act in time and space. The ray life chooses to act through certain constellation lords. The ray life chooses to act through certain constellational lords who are attuned to it. By an act of its sufficient will to act in time and space. Let us look at them for a moment, and we're going to, you know, when DK is given the triangles, there's a lot we could say or attempt to say about them, but he is going to give some epitome here, just as he did with Aries, Leo, and Capricorn. So let us see. Do you get the sense that maybe this section should be studied for a year? Gemini. This is the great symbolic constellation of the two brothers expressing the interplay between the dualities. Because it is governed by Mercury and Venus, orthodoxly and esoterically, you have the light of the intuition and of the mind blended together into one illumined whole. So Mercury, in this context, is the intuition, and Venus is the mind. You have the light of the intuition and of the mind blended together into one illuminated whole. You have really buddhi-manas, don't you? Typical of the fusion of spirit and matter. The mind represents matter and intuition represents the spirit, and the demonstration of their essential oneness. So you have the oneness of buddhi-manas. Gemini, as you know, is the sign of divine interplay, and it is the life of the Father of spirit and of will which flows through the two brothers. And here we have the possibility of Jupiter, Zeus, in Gemini, and how it unites spirit and soul. It is the life of the Father, in Virgo and in Gemini. Virgo is a triple sign, and we know I am the mother and the child, I God, I matter am, so I'm the Father too, but even here in Gemini, it's the life of the Father, of the spirit of the will, which flows through the two brothers. The monad flows through the soul and personality, in fact. Which flows through the two brothers, through the polar opposites, making them one in reality, though two in manifestation. So the nature of the Father energy substantiates the reality, the identicality of the two brothers, though they appear to manifest as two. They are one, they are really of one substance. Gemini, as you know, is the sign of divine interplay, and it is the life of the Father of will, of spirit and of will, which flows through the two brothers, through the polar opposites, making them one in reality. So when the Gemini discovers that which is neither of the pairs of opposites, it is very important for the Gemini subject to discover that which is neither of the pairs of opposites, though two in manifestation. Their real nature as the elder brother and the prodigal son is revealed by the intuition when it takes hold of the mind. It's what we have always been on the monadic level. The elder brother and the prodigal son have monadic origin. The elder brother and the prodigal son have monadic origin. The elder brother stays at home, and the jiva, the monad, in extension, I call it, makes its way through the five lower worlds. But it is the will to love which governs the relationship and which finally brings about divine synthesis. DK has so much of the Gemini in his nature, and he worked with so many people who had strong Gemini. It is the will to love. The will to love governs the relationship between the elder brother and the prodigal son. Now there's another, what can we call it? There's another idea of two brothers relating to soul and personality. So let's say that two brothers relate to the monad and the jiva, and the two brothers relate to the soul and personality, which is playing out on a lower turn of the spiral, what the monad and jiva are playing out over a longer period of time, the time of the monadic pilgrimage. Well, we'll go through it, you see. And of course, we will be compelled to study every word, because DK is choosing his words here with such care, dealing with the transcending will of the greater life and how it manifests itself through transmission, transformation, transfiguration. This is the descent of the great arranger, you might say, the one who ensures the manifestation of purpose in the lower worlds, and it does it in different ways. So it's necessary to keep remembering the three aspects of the will, the conditioning will, which is creative, the will to fulfillment, and the will which conquers death, and how they can relate to each one of the signs, remarkably. So there's a ninefoldness here, and this we must remember. There is a ninefoldness as each of the three types of will, which we are studying, appears in each member of the zodiacal triangle. And that's another one. Maybe it's a bit too late to put it in, but this is the singular. We already have zodiacal triangles, but ZLTRL, zodiacal triangle. And so, as is often the case, the numbers 3 and 9 are related, and there is the sense in which each triangle becomes a 9. There was an earlier part of the book, I think, talking about the branching out of the triangle and the three rays that seem to go forth from every point, every angle. Well, okay. We are at a point where we can say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology 147A, page 626. And we're beginning with Esoteric Astrology number 147B, page 626.